recess, and we have a 10:30 time certain for which we are 25 minutes late. Can you please read the title for report? Item number, we've got a rescheduled agenda item, so can you please read the title for item number 1044, and then we will set a date on which it will be rescheduled.
1044, declare intent to initiate local improvement district formation proceedings to construct street, multi-use path, and stormwater improvements in the Southeast 33rd Avenue and Party Street Local Improvement District.
Unless there's objection, this has been rescheduled to Wednesday, November 16th at 9:30 a.m. Hearing no objection, so done. Now, can you please read the title for report item number 1045?
Accept Portland Commission on Disability 2011 Progress Report.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. I am so happy to be the commissioner in charge of neighborhood involvement, which houses the disability program and the Portland Commission on Disability. I have observed the amazing work that city employees and community members do to improve access to programs and services for people with disabilities. We certainly still have a ways to go to ensure universal accessibility to city programs and services. We have achieved some huge accomplishments in my time in office, and I'm very happy to bring this report to council today. The creation of the Portland Commission on Disability occurred in October 2009. The commission was seated in February of 2010, and it has been doing wonderful work. The commission is charged with guiding the city towards ensuring that it is a more universally accessible city for all, and to advise the commissioner in charge and council on disability-related issues. We have increased accommodations for people with disabilities, for instance, in council chambers for all city council meetings. The council has made a commitment to funding an inventory of all city-owned facilities, and we've made other improvements as well. There are other city programs that work with community members to provide accessibility for people with disabilities, including the Disability Program in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, the Portland Parks and Recreation Adaptive and Inclusive Recreation Program, Portland Police Bureau's Developmental Disabilities Advisory Committee, Portland Housing Bureau's Housing Connections Program, Volunteer Emergency Registry Program, and many others, and still there need to be more. I have been amazed at the involvement, commitment, and expertise of the Commission. The Commission has been steadfastly involved in the creation of the Office of Equity and Human Rights and has greatly informed the creation of that new Bureau. I'm now happy to introduce Nyla McCarthy, the chair of the Portland Commission on Disability, to present more on the excellent work of the commission.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz and Mayor Adams and fellow commissioners. So two things. Number one, we're scheduled for half an hour. You will be very happy to know that I have no intention of using the entire half an hour. And I'm not going to read the PowerPoint to you because you can follow it on yourself. But I do want to say that I am here today in an incredible spirit of gratitude and celebration and also and pride. And the pride piece, I'd like to just take a moment. We have a third of our commissioners who showed up today. And so with your own gratitude, I'd like to ask each of them to state their name for you because I believe they've been working hard and deserve a moment of notice. So maybe we could start with Commissioner Johnson.
My name is Nicholas Johnson, Commissioner of Portland Commission on Disability. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you.
Travis Ball, Chair of the Employment Subcommittee.
Jules Harris, Vice Chair of the Executive Committee and Chair of the Livability and Wellness Subcommittee.
Joe Vandermeer, Co-Chair of Accessibility and Health Department.
Dan Harris, I'm also part of the committee.
Alan De La Torre, Co-Chair for Accessibility and the Built Environment.
Chris Logan, Commissioner and a part of the Employment Subcommittee.
Hello, I'm Steve Brown, and I am the Commissioner Representative for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
And, of course, our staff people you know, Nicole and Patrick. So, what you've got the PowerPoint, you may or may not have looked at it. What you may not know are a couple of things I just thought it would be helpful to just share with you somewhat off point, but really on point, that there are 30 commissioners on the Disabilities Commission, and we represent pretty much every disability as well as the state, the county, the city. We also have people who represent almost every agency that serves a person with a disability. We're very diverse in terms of race and as well as different culture and ethnicities. And so we're very happy to have that size commission. And in less than a year, well, actually it's been a year and a half, since our first meeting when we all got together and none of us knew each other, we had no work plan, I am really, really proud that I am able to share what we've accomplished in that time with you on the limited resources, which was a 0.2 staff person, which we shared at the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and a 0.5 support person because of the hard work of folks who are here today. So there's our mission, our core objectives. And what I just want to say about Bureau liaisons, we actually are grateful to all of you because your liaisons have been coming to our meetings. Many of them have been very involved in all of the subcommittees and have kind of assisted as providing guidance to us and information carrying back to you, we hope. We have four subcommittees, and I'm going to talk about those in a moment. And we have developed numerous ad hoc committees, and I was realizing in this report we didn't necessarily do those. We had a chance to completely revise our bylaws this year because the bylaws which were put in place didn't really reflect the work as we began evolving. We created our offices and procedures because though the commission birthing committee, which had basically brought PCOD together, had done a lot of great work, once we really became a body, it was clear that we needed to fine-tune it. We're sort of like toddlers right now at best. And I think with our work plan, I was really pleased to be able to facilitate a 5-year work plan for this committee, this commission, but because things like the Office of Equity and the Portland plan came up, a lot of our resources really ended up going to those. So some of the things on our full work plan, which are available on the website, which we didn't make you look at today, are still waiting to be addressed. So this is a little bit about empowering. I don't need to say that. These are, however, our four formal subcommittees. We have a livability and wellness subcommittee, and I'm going to talk briefly about each of those in a moment and what they've done. We have an accessibility in the built environment committee, and that committee is really taking a look at the city of Portland, at its facilities, at its accessibility in all levels, not just for mobility disabilities, but across the board. Public outreach and awareness, which is really to assist folks in understanding the roles that people play with disabilities in our society and visibility of them and kind of just opportunities to help city officials recognize the roles that people with disabilities might play. And we're going to be developing a leadership academy and institute to try to recruit new leaders from the field of disabilities to come out and be at meetings. And we hope to see one or two of them on that council in the next decade at a minimum. And an employment committee, which is taking a look at the issues of employment. So the livability and wellness subcommittee, which its goal is to increase community connection, has recently, it's not on the plan, begun some work with the emergency preparedness folks, your new city named office. So we're spending some time taking a look at how response is going to be in emergency preparedness, and that coordinates with the city. That's of some interest to me because I also am the director of the state's training and prevention unit for abuse, and actually was quite interested in your response, and thank you for supporting the work of domestic violence. Domestic violence against people with disabilities is unbelievably high. In fact, women with disabilities are the highest victimization rate, but I'm not here to educate you about that today. So I'm just grateful to thank you for doing that. I want you to know that what this committee's been really working at was auditing all of the waterfront and park activities to make sure that they'd be accessible for all forms of disabilities, people with physical disabilities, vision disabilities, hearing disabilities. They've worked closely with your city staff to take a look at the movies and the films that are accessible, and they're going to be working very closely with the emergency response team to begin taking a look at the procedures, particularly with 911 and police that are going on. We can see that our built environment subcommittee, and I want to stress.
Can I just ask a question?
Absolutely.
You said to make sure our movies are accessible, and I'm assuming you're talking about our movies in the parks.
Yes.
So what is a typical issue that comes up about access to a park for someone who wants to see a movie?
Okay, so depending on your disability, the most obvious one that people think about is physical mobility. So being able to get to the site would be an issue. Is the site, does it have loose gravel or grass that would make it difficult for people with chairs or mobility disabilities to get there? Or does it actually have nice compact gravel or cement or some form of hard turf that would make it accessible? Are there spaces that are sort of set aside for folks with vision disabilities who can perhaps have limited vision and would want to be able to see close up? Are there captioning available for the films for folks who might be having hearing disabilities? Those are all issues that that we've been looking at and auditing and working very successfully with city staff on addressing. Okay. That's a good question. Thank you for asking that, because most people don't even think, we don't think about that, because when we're not with an obvious disability, the issue doesn't really come into our minds that people who have them, which are like a quarter of the population, and as people age, as we know, become more, are going to be struggling with that. Our built environment subcommittee has been really active and has a lot of city staff actively on it, as well as community members. And in fact, that's something else I want to say. We were talking about budgets earlier. We have so many community members involved in all of our subcommittees, which is really wonderful, besides our commission. And frankly, there's about a third of the commission that are highly active, and a lot of this work is being done in partnership with city staff and community members who show up for our subcommittees. And I know that Mayor Adams just signed a proposal that one of our, that Alan, our chair of this subcommittee, just went to Dublin on making Portland an age and accessible for all disabilities and all ability level city. We're kind of excited. It's a United Nations thing, so we're going to be working on that. They've also been looking at the city's public facilities. We're going to be taking, you can see these are all from our work plan. What they have done is what I kind of want to focus on in the past year. We audited council chambers, as you know, for accessibility. So that's one room in one building of hundreds of buildings. And we're kind of looking forward to our movement into the Office of Equity. And thank you all, by the way, for your support of that. I know I was here in a slightly less celebratory mood and more hopeful, and now I'm here to say that we're looking forward to having that office assist us with ongoing audits as well as data collection. We've audited the Sunday Parkways, which is a fabulous event that I know all of you have participated in to make sure that folks with disabilities could participate. We've written letters and been very active in working with TriMet around accessibility issues, especially related to budget cuts and how that affects folks with limited access to transportation. We've been involved with the Buildings Code Division, sending letters of support there, and that subcommittee continues to work on accessibility as well as looking at an issue which wasn't on there, working with Portland State University on the accessibility grant and proposal that we've partnered in with them. Our Public Outreach and Awareness Committee, that's one I personally sit on, has our general goal was to make people, the general public, aware of disability, as well as to take a look at developing leadership and increase awareness of how many people with disabilities are present and visible in the city. We've done lots of technical advice to the Portland Plan, attended numerous equity tag committees, Portland Plan committees. I believe you have a document in front of you which showed all of our recommendations. The original Portland Plan language did not include people with disabilities, and so we really spent some time going through it, making some recommendations how we could just put that language in a way that would be more truly inclusive of all citizens of the city. We've been highly involved, as Commissioner Fritz mentioned, with the Creation Committee, and we'll continue to do so. We've created our own website and Facebook page. There's a brochure which we take out when we do speaking engagements, and if we had adequate staff support, we probably would be able to really be getting out there and doing more, because all of us have jobs. I commute to Salem every day, so many of us are not really able to do this during our working hours. The Employment Subcommittee, and I've actually asked Commissioner Wall to come and talk about that, because he's also going to use this as an opportunity to kind of talk to you about our employment proposal. Thank you, Commissioner Wall.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Glad to be here. Thank you for this opportunity to talk with you about our work. So over the past 18 months, since the Employment Committee got off and began to work, we've sought to deepen our understanding and knowledge of the employment challenges, barriers, and opportunities available to residents of Portland with disabilities. As you may or may not know, people with disabilities have been and continue to be significantly underemployed and unemployed. In fact, while 18-24% of our population have a disability, less than 35% of people with disabilities are, that is, working age adults with disabilities, are in fact employed. People with significant or severe disabilities are unemployed and underemployed at a much greater rate. And in fact, many work in segregated work sites, often for sub-minimum wages. So the city itself, from the information that's available to us, does not its workforce doesn't really represent our community in the sense that it doesn't have a proportional or even a significant number of people with disabilities in its employ. So in looking at how we might address this issue, and again, trying to deepen our own understanding of it. We've talked with a number of folks over the past year, organizations and individuals, including the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation Services, the Bureau of the Oregon Commission for the Blind, the Bureau of Labor and Industries, which houses, of course, the Civil Rights Division, which is responsible for enforcing the ADA and Oregon Equal Employment Opportunity Law. And we've begun to formulate some ideas and some thoughts, as well as a proposal about how we might address some of the issues that we've had come before us. And we think that it would be very, very useful for the city to designate itself as a model employer of persons with disabilities and develop a plan for carrying out such a status. And we have crafted a proposal for doing just that and have begun to talk with staff about this proposal. We hope in the coming months to bring that before you when we complete it and explore how you and we may move forward in addressing this important issue.
I have a question. Have you had conversations with our professional team that does recruitment at the city about how they do recruitments for open positions, and have you identified some existing barriers that preclude qualified people with disabilities from seeking employment with the city?
We haven't had a specific conversation about that particular issue. We have been talking with the Bureau of Human Resources staff about this issue. And that's something that we'd be looking at more carefully in a planning process for addressing how the city might better become an employer of persons with disabilities.
We're really just beginning. You're sort of hearing about this for the first time today. And so there are so many issues that prevent people with disabilities from normally considering themselves to apply for jobs. They're similar to the issues that people of color experience, but only if you sort of magnified that from having a lifetime of messages of being kind of invisible and being told that no matter how skilled you are. I know even my own self, I remember being put on the spot once in a public job interview about my disability. And normal people, quote unquote, don't usually get asked those kinds of questions. And so people are often afraid to come forward. They might not think that they're going to have a chance. And so working with recruiters to find kind of new and innovative ways to do outreach is often a big one. The normal methods don't always work, posting ads, things like that. So when the proposal makes its way to you, we'll be hopefully in partnership with you on kind of figuring out exactly how we're going to move forward on that.
And the proposal itself will actually be a process for further identifying, analyzing the problems, and then, in fact, forging a response to those issues. I might share with you that there are similar initiatives being carried out by other cities as well as by the federal government. Roughly a year and a half ago, President Obama issued an executive order declaring that the federal government would become a model employer of persons with disabilities and outlined some very specific steps, including the development of a plan for the government to carry this out, and designation of high officials who would be responsible for carrying out and reporting the results of that process. And there are a number of cities, including the city of Baltimore and Chicago, that have also initiated similar kinds of efforts. So what we're looking to do is model very much after these efforts.
Thank you, Commissioner. And you mentioned President Obama. He has proclaimed October 2011 as National Disability Employment Awareness Month, and the council will be having a proclamation in the next couple of weeks to have that proclaimed in the city of Portland as well. Your comments and your work are an example of why I'm so happy that the Portland Commission on Disability is partnering with the new Office of Equity and Human Rights and the work on looking first internally at what can the city of Portland do in making our employment practices, our hiring practices, what we do within our bureaus, all the bureaus, more equitable. So I'm very excited to hear about this initiative. I think it matches well with the work that the new office will do when it has staff and a director. And I have to compliment you right now on all of the volunteer work that you've put in, also Patrick Philpott and Nicole Sharon, who have been doing sterling work with the very limited resources. So it's important that we have these partnerships when we do have such limited resources and are likely to continue to have limited resources as we continue to struggle through this recession. So thank you for your work.
Thank you. And I'll be talking about just that issue in a moment when we get to general accomplishments. The final subcommittee actually not the final subcommittee, but the other work that we've done outside of the formal subcommittees, but primarily the executive committee and members of the commission. We've served on the Senate Bill 716 task force to ensure the passage of that. We've been working with the Charter Commission to examine all of the issues that exist within the Charter Commission. We were highly involved with the equity tag. We've been doing a lot of work in the fair housing community, looking at impediments to fair housing for people with all disabilities. We serve on the Office of Neighborhood Involvement Bureau Advisory Committee. We've written so many letters of support related to every kind of issue that comes up for folks with disabilities. I mentioned we'd done our bylaws over, and this is what Commissioner Fitz was just talking about. We did lobby. We began lobbying once we had our five-year plan. It was pretty obvious to those of us on the executive committee that Portland being the city of sustainability, that the things that we've identified in our first year as projects for this commission to go forward simply could not be sustained on a 0.2 staff person and a 0.5 administrative person. And I know that there's budget cuts, and so that's why I said I'm here in a spirit of gratitude, thanking you for what you've given us. You've given us a full-time administrative person. That's wonderful. And Patrick is wonderful, and Nicole is wonderful. And what we ask them to do is probably not fair or human, and it's going to continue because our committees are just gearing up. And so the Office of Equity will be one place where we'll continue to get more support. But one of the documents that that you have with you is a budget proposal, and so I'm not going to ask you for that budget now, but I want you to know what we would have asked had it not been such a grim budget cycle. And there's a two-year proposed budget, and a lot of work went into this. I want you to know that we convened several times, and I have a friend who's the head of Massachusetts State Disabilities Commission, and I asked her for operating budgets for other cities who have similar programs. Most commissions on disabilities and programs on disabilities that are doing the kind of work that we do have anywhere from 3 to 5 full-time staff people who oversee and support the work to ensure that the integration happens across the city as well as with us in something like a county. So we thought this was a fairly lean and mean budget, honestly, given what we needed, and then we found out the reality of the world. So we'll sort of continue. I think the in-kind donations you're getting from all of the commissions commissioners and the agencies that we bring to us are wonderful, and we'll continue to do so. But as we also get our bumps and bounces, it's going to get increasingly difficult. So we're sort of all in the same pot. But I did want to point that out to you. So be looking at it, because I'm sure you'll see it again in the next budget cycle. And in the meantime, at some point, I'm sure that we will come forward with our The word handicap, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is actually kind of a negative term because it reflects the era in which people with disabilities were put out on the streets to die and came forward with their cap in hand to beg. So we'll be cap in hand at some point once again with you looking for additional supports. We're working right now on a political paper. It's not finished yet, but it's close to it. I was looking at the final draft the other night. There's a small group of us because we know it's an election year coming up, and we believe that there are a lot of issues related to disabilities that political candidates would want to be informed on. So we're going to have a position paper that we'll be circulating to political candidates. We also intend to invite them to come and discuss. We're even thinking of holding a candidates forum. Not sure whether folks would prioritize that yet. We might partner with the League of Women Voters on that or someone else. But we do believe that the issue of disability needs to be on the radar of every political candidate more than it ever has been before. So we form a rather large voting constituency, as you know, 25% of the population. So I've talked about the budget. We're working with the Institute on Aging and the Charette. We're working on the ADA. We worked on the ADA's 20th anniversary and Making a Difference Awards, which, by the way, I know you all probably know about, but I'm inviting you October 20th to the Connecting Communities event, which will be held, and that the Making a Difference Awards will be passed out. That's wonderful. There were 550 people there last year. We're expecting about 800 this year. So that's a pretty sizable percentage of Portland folks who show up, many of whom have disabilities, many of whom serve people with disabilities, and many of whom are just allies and friends. It's lots of fun. There's food, there's drink. Every person in this room is invited. As a matter of fact, we'd love to see you there. And, of course, the rally for the Federation and National Association of the Blind. Yes, did you?
No, I'm impressed with all your sponsors.
Sponsors, yeah. Times are tight, so Connecting Communities is looking for ways to, and we don't charge anybody. I mean, it's amazing that we can bring 800 people in. It's feed them. There's alcohol donated and non-alcohol donated, of course, as well. And there and people, it's a celebration. It's truly a celebration of people coming together. It's a highly diverse group, and most of the populations come. So please come. Please come. It'll be a great time. And so that's kind of our dog and pony show, if you will, what we've accomplished in our first actual year. Any questions?
I just have one comment, which is there, in one of your PowerPoint boxes, it describes your public outreach work.
Yes.
And some of the work you're doing to influence legislation, do public awareness. And I would encourage you on that stuff to just routinely copy electronically the council offices, if you don't already, so that we're aware of what's in the pipeline and what you're advocating about.
Absolutely.
You may already do it, but it I think a sort of a routine electronic CC would
right.
be helpful, so we know what issues that you've prioritized and you're advocating on.
So thank you for that. And I want to say we try to be very careful, because we know as a commission we have to be careful about what we're so-called politicking on behalf of. And now that Patrick is full-time, you will be besieged with as much information as you want. We're very eager to keep you guys informed, because honestly, this issue affects everybody in this room, and we're really grateful for the support that every one of you have given in funding and trusting in this, and Commissioner Fritz for her leadership. And it's been wonderful having such a strong advocate. Thank you. And the mayor on this. So thank you. And we do look forward to working with you. I think we're going to really make Portland. We know, even though that the demographics are now, what is it, something like 55% of the city is under the age of 50. Many of us are aging, and as we age, the numbers of folks with disability, I know it's amazing, isn't it? The disabilities, when you reach the age of 60, which some of us are closer to than others, that number of 24% of the population with disabilities, national statistics say that number raises up to somewhere between 50 and 60%. So it affects every single person. And so even though not all disabilities are visible, it affects regardless of race, regardless of age, regardless of religion. I mean, it affects everyone. So we just really want to work with you about that. So
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, for that comment, because it reminds me that although the Portland Commission on Disability has been housed in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and now will be in the Office of Equity and Human Rights, you serve the entire city and the entire council. So I encourage you to set up liaisons with each of the council offices and meet with us quarterly or however often is mutually convenient, just for updating and relationship building and getting to know what the issues are.
We're happy to do that. We have folks who want to be liaisons, and I think some of you have been contacted. So we're having a January retreat to revisit our work plan, and I want to spend some time developing some additional leadership. And so the new leaders will be coming to see you and finding out what issues are important to you and how we can advise you.
Thank you. Anyone signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
All right. Would you please call the vote?
Move to accept the report.
Seconded. Would you please call the vote on the motion?
Leonard?
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for this very nice work. Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you, each one, for taking the time to be here today. The Commission on Disability has made amazing accomplishments in a very short time and has proven how 30-plus very different folks from different backgrounds can work together in the common cause. And it's truly an example for the Office of Equity and Human Rights in looking at all bureaus and working with all bureaus, involving staff, and doing a lot with very little. I do appreciate your proposed budgets for the disability work within the city, and note that it was close to $400,000 for next year and then $470,000 the following year. That indeed is what I believe it would take to staff appropriately, since we don't. So that brings into context the budget of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, which is a lot, doesn't allow for that, particularly looking at how we're funding other aspects of what the equity work needs to accomplish. You are all used to doing above and beyond with challenges beyond what many could comprehend. And so I appreciate your commitment to work together, to work with me, to work with staff. Again, thanks to Nicole Sharon and Patrick Philpott, who, again, show how very much city staff invest of their own time and their own passion and heart, as well as what they're above and beyond what they're paid to do. So it's a remarkable project and has come a long way in a very short time and is now poised to continue the work and expand it and work with each member of council and each bureau on the important work that you do. So thank you very much, Nyla, for your leadership in particular. Aye.
Fish?
Chair McCarthy, thank you for an excellent presentation, and to the members of the commission who are present. And a special shout out for the work that you did on the analysis of impediments portion of the city's comprehensive plan. We've received extremely positive feedback on that portion, and there is a wealth of very useful information in that report about existing barriers to housing choice. And so we thank you for your full participation in that project. Aye.
Saltzman.
I want to thank Commissioner Fritz and the commission for its outstanding work, and you definitely have your feet under yourselves and a lot of progress ahead, so I look forward to it. Appreciate your continued advocacy and analysis and everything you're doing. So great work. Aye.
Adams.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for your excellent leadership on this issue and the equity issue. Chair McCarthy, the entire commission and subcommittee participants, I am, as mayor, interested in Portland being a model on this issue. And so your work has gotten us off to a really, really strong start. And I think the inclusion in the Office of Equity will help you even go further and faster. The one thing I would just reinforce that's a pet peeve of mine, and that is the numbers, the baseline numbers, and we're not going to be able to the baseline numbers and investing in the solutions that are going to yield the most results. And sometimes those are really obvious, concrete investments, and that's exactly what it takes to move to improve the quality of life. And sometimes they aren't so obvious. But as long as they're strategic and we can see the actual improvement in quality of life and improvement in the prosperity, then we'll really be moving as quickly and in the direction that I'd like to go. So I look forward to that. I know the numbers will emerge if you all come up with interim sort of numbers and goals and a baseline of where we're at and sort of the improvement we're looking for. Interested in that. That's a key part of what the Office of Equity will do. Because when I look back again, and Commissioner Fritz shared this, when I look back again over 20-some years of service here in City of Portland, I see an absence of that. And so we really have not held our collective selves accountable to see improvement, sustainable improvement on this area or other areas of equity. But I feel very hopeful and enthusiastic that we're going to get there because with very little support, you have done so much in such a short amount of time, and I am very, very grateful. So thank you. Please vote aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for 1046?
Tentatively deny with conditions appeal of Buckman Community Association and uphold hearings officer's decision to approve with conditions the application of Central Catholic High School for a conditional use master plan with adjustments to expand and renovate their existing facility at 2401 Southeast Stark Street, LU11115222, CUMSAD.
Mr. Hardy, welcome back. I'm hopeful that you'll be able to make us help make up for lost time here.
Yes, I will try.
Should I offer you the amendment at this point? Or
as soon as you get recognized, I thereby recognize you.
Okay, this is an amendment to the findings, and Mr. Hardy can explain it, but it does reflect the council discussion on the hours of use for the parking lot. So I would move this amendment.
Second.
Okay. Mayor, I was not present for the hearing and have not had time to review the record, so I'm going to excuse myself and go thank the Commission on Disability.
Sounds good. It's been moved and seconded. Mr. Hardy, do you have any comments on this other than you think it's a great idea?
I don't have any comments. I'm here if you have any questions about the amendment.
Questions from council?
Has the amendment been floated past the representatives of Central Catholic?
It has.
It has.
Yes.
Okay, unless there's additional council discussion, Carla, can you please call the vote on the proposal?
If I could just ask, and then that's a modification to condition E. Is condition M also, I'm assuming, been reviewed by Central Catholic?
Yes.
Okay.
And the excuse me, the amendment to condition E is the sole amendment at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Unless there's additional council discussion, Carly, can you please call the vote on the motion to amend?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So amended. What else do we need to do today? Is that it?
That's it.
Yeah, we need to adopt.
Yep. So we will now take the vote on the item before us. Do I need to say any more?
Catherine Beaumont, City Attorney's Office. What you have before you is the findings that would reflect the council's final decision on this matter. And if you adopt these findings, your vote will be to deny the appeal of the Buckman Neighborhood Association and uphold the hearings officer's decision as modified. So all you need to do is take a final vote to adopt it.
Unless there's additional discussion from council or the clerk?
Do we need a motion?
That would be fine.
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to adopt the findings as and other items as described in agenda item today, 1046. Carla, would you please call the vote?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it, everybody. All right. That gets us to, can you please read the title for I need your vote on
regular
this.
Agenda.
Item number 1028.
We're going to take it right now.
No, I'm not leaving the chamber. I was just
stretching.
I'm just going to go play something to somebody. Sit right here.
You can go ahead.
1068?
Yeah, 1064.
Authorize intergovernmental agreement with the Portland Development Commission for the land disposition and development of the Oregon Sustainability Center within the South Park Block's urban renewal area.
And this is actually a second reading, although it says previous agenda. So would you please call the vote?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I generally, having lost a vote, will then vote in support if I think the subsequent resolutions and ordinances are in compliance with that. However, on this one, the land is zoned RX residential, and we have a policy of no loss of residential housing, so I don't think we should be removing the housing opportunity at this time without doing the zone change. No.
Fish?
No.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Motion is approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote for second reading, item number 1065.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Oregon University System to jointly share the cost to obtain design development and 50% construction documents for the Oregon Sustainability Center within the South Park Block's urban renewal area. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I believe the city should not be paying half the design costs on a building when our stake could be only one-third ownership. No.
Fish?
No.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1065 is approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote for what is second reading, item number 1066?
Amend contract with Portland Streetcar, Inc. for Portland Streetcar Operations Assistance. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Several weeks ago, I pulled this from consent because the numbers in the request didn't add up. There's $13,000 in costs, but the $20,000 increased in allocation. So in working with the wonderful staff, Vicky Didi and others in the streetcar program, it turns out the overhead is 118% of the salary, and city overhead is much less than this. And I understand that different agencies calculate overhead differently. However, this has brought to light, and that this is an industry standard, this has brought to light the fact that many of our contracts include a high level of overhead, and I think we need to look at that as a global issue, particularly given the economy at this time. However, because a contract is a contract, a promise is a promise, we do have the contract with Portland Streetcar Inc. for this level of overhead, and therefore I vote aye on this ordinance.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1066 is approved. Can you please read the title for item number 1067?
Authorize long-term bonds for local improvement system development charge and sidewalk repair projects.
Good morning. This is the standard ordinance, right?
Indeed, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Jonas Beery, City Debt Manager. Very briefly, ordinance authorizes up to $4.5 million of limited tax improvement bonds that will finance the costs of certain completed local improvement district projects and certain existing system development charge contracts. These bonds will be repaid from the revenues collected from existing assessment contracts between the city and property owners that are benefiting from the financed improvements. The mechanics of the assessment contract program provide a reliable source of repayment. However, the bonds will carry an additional pledge of the city's full faith and credit. Bonds are expected to be sold via competitive bidding process in December. I'd be happy to answer questions if there are any.
Any questions or discussion from council?
I have a question. I thought we had the Bancroft Fund, which can be used to back LIDs and such. Why are we having to take out additional bonds?
There is a fund that's used to backstop some of the program. What this does is take some of the existing contracts that are financed on an interim basis and fixes them out over a longer term based on kind of current market conditions. And so it effectively, if there's specific programmatic questions, that probably is best addressed with the people who manage the program. I'd be happy to help facilitate that. But the volume of assessments and contracts within the program, I don't believe can be supported strictly from using the fund to make those payments.
So if you could get me some more information on that, because this ordinance authorizes bonds not to exceed $4.5 million, and the Bancroft Fund is much more than that. So it's, if you could, before next week, get me the information about why we need to borrow more, I'd really appreciate it.
I could do that.
All right. Additional questions? Anyone wishing to testify on this matter? Moves to a second reading. Further consideration next week. Commissioner Saltzman has a conflict, and so he's going to be leaving us. So the next two will be unanimous, so they'll be held over. Can you please read the title for item number 1068?
Authorize a grant agreement not to exceed $50,000 to CARES Northwest to perform medical child abuse assessments.
Thank you. Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Kevin, you want to come forward? I brought this through our budget process last time as one of the requests I made for one-time money to CARES Northwest. And the only reason I asked Kevin to be here today and to have this on the regular agenda is not a lot of people are aware of what CARES Northwest does because of the nature of what they do. And the nature of what they do that I became familiar with a number of years ago is probably working with some of the most severely abused children that one can possibly imagine, often at the hands of the people they should trust the most. And I've had an opportunity to work closely with CARES Northwest to see the outstanding work they've done. I am very grateful for their existence and the work that they do. And when Kevin and I talked, we talked about the kind of the irony that they couldn't publicize more of what they do because of what they do. And because of my own experience with that organization, I certainly wanted to do on behalf of the city what I could to help them achieve the goals of not just examining children that have been abused, but the counseling services and the variety of help they give children who oftentimes have been just devastated beyond imagination. So, Kevin, thank you for the great work you do, and certainly take this opportunity to speak to whatever you'd like.
Well, thank you. My name is Kevin Dowling. I work as the manager at CARES Northwest, and I want to thank Commissioner Leonard for a couple things. One, for bringing attention to the work that we do, because I think you're absolutely right. I don't think people in our community appreciate the scope of child abuse that's happening every day. We are Portland's only medical program that sees children for concerns of abuse. We're very much a collaborative effort in responding to child abuse in our community. Collaborative in a couple ways. We are part of four large health systems. And we are also, because even though we're medical providers, We work closely with law enforcement and child protective services. We have county mental health on site at our program. We have a county nurse practitioner on site at our program. And we respond to about 3,000 referrals a year and see approximately 1,500 children in our outpatient clinic for child abuse concerns. We see an additional over 200 children in the emergency department at Randall Children's Hospital at Legacy Emanuel, and see between 100 and 200 children a year who are inpatients at Randall Children's Hospital over at Emanuel. So the scope, I think, is much greater than people realize. The funding to serve the population has always been a challenge. I've worked at CARE since 1994. I started as a child abuse interviewer there, and I've been the manager since 2001. And I think a lot of the gray hair on top of my head is from always worrying about how we're going to provide the services that kids and families need, regardless of their ability to pay for those services. And that's why we have multiple funding streams to help with that. As an outpatient clinic, we bill medical insurance. But about 70% of the children we see are either on Oregon Health Plan or don't have insurance. And so what that means is for a large population of the kids that we see, for every $1 we bill to insurance, we get about 33, 32 cents back. And that makes other sources of funding really critical to be able to serve those children and families. And those other sources of funding come some from state criminal fines and fees that are collected that support our multidisciplinary response to child abuse in our county. There's also other funds from the health systems, the four health systems. But I want to thank you for the support to help us in terms of provide the medical care to the kids that need our help. And just really appreciate it. Thank you.
So just so you understand, this is the organization that so that if somebody calls with suspicion of child abuse and the police arrive and find there's some reason to believe it's occurring, is this group of people that see the children first to do the assessment of the child. And it's...
The goal is really when children and families come to us for an assessment, they're being seen by a physician, a nurse practitioner, and a master's level social worker. We're going to take a detailed medical and social history, not just focusing on that current concern, but a lot of times kids have lived in really high-risk environments that come to us, and we think it behooves us to take a look at the whole child. And we also coordinate that medical care with, if there's a detective assigned to the case, we want them to be able to be there to listen to what the child says, so hopefully the child doesn't have to repeat that over and over. If there's a child protective service worker involved in the case, we also want them to be present to listen to what the child says, again, to minimize the trauma that kids have to go through by retelling what happened to them.
So thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
This is our small way of acknowledging that.
Thank you very much for what you do. Can you tell me, is there something specific that the $50,000 the city's giving is dedicated to?
It would go toward the salaries and benefits of the medical providers and staff that see children for concerns of abuse. So it would go to help fill that gap between the cost of providing care and the resources that we have available to provide that care to make sure all kids would have medical evaluations.
And what are your other funding sources?
There's the largest source of funding is outpatient billing revenue, and that's approximately 42% of the funding. The next largest source of funding are they're called CAMI funds, and CAMI is an acronym for Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Intervention Funds. They're fines that are collected across the state for different kinds of crimes, and they go into a pot of money that's designed to go back to child victims. Well, to victims, and a portion of that goes to child victims and addressing child abuse in each of Oregon's 36 counties. So that's approximately 28-29% of our revenue. And then each of the four health systems contributes. We have grants. One of the significant grants that we have right now is Portland Children's Levy Grant that helps fund urgent assessments and support for urgent assessments. We also have other smaller grants and then rely on fundraising.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter? Carla, would you please call the vote on item number 1068?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I appreciate that this did go through the regular budget process, and I certainly appreciate the work that you do. Aye.
Fish?
Thank you very much. I was at a gathering of Volunteers of America, Oregon last night, and talked a little bit about Children Relief Nursery and prevention programs designed to help stressed out families and high-risk families avoid child abuse. And we also talked about some of the very discouraging data that's piling up. I call it like cars on I-5 at rush hour. And that includes 20,000 children statewide who are attending public school who are classified as homeless, 3% of the Portland public school population. That's 1,200 children who are classified as homeless and still going to school. So it doesn't account for homeless children that are not able to go to school because of the significant distress. And all of these risk factors contribute to, as you know, I mean, I'm speaking to an expert, but I'm telling what I learned last night. These risk factors contribute to a greater likelihood of there being some kind of abuse. So thank you for the work that you do, and I'm also appreciative of the work that the whole team is doing upstream to try to address these problems before they become acute. So, and thank you, Commissioner Leonard, for putting this on the regular agenda. Aye.
Okay. Adams.
Well, thank you for your patience in sitting through the morning so we could put a face to the organization, and thanks to Commissioner Leonard for bringing this forward. I'm very pleased to vote aye. So approved. Unless there's objections, I'm going to suspend the rules and ask that departing acting U.S. Attorney for Oregon, Dwight Holden, please come forward. And soon to be departing is...
Soon to be departing. Tomorrow I hand over the reins. No, Friday I hand over the reins. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I just wanted to stop by, and I know Commissioner Saltzman had to step out, but I hope he's listening, because I wanted to thank each of you individually. I've had 20 some odd months now on in a job that they told me I would probably have 6 weeks. and we've been at sprint pace the entire time. You know, I started with kind of a list of 10 things I wanted to get done, and we got that done, and I was still on the job, so we came up with 10 more things. And throughout that entire time, hi, Commissioner Saltzman. My principal mission in this office has been to transform it from a traditional law enforcement agency into a community action agency, and get us into the community more, not just here, but from here and Baker and Southern Oregon and Rogue Valley, the coast. But my key partner in getting the community here in Portland has been council, and working through each of you on different pieces, human trafficking with Dan early on, mortgage fraud and fair housing with Nick, various diversity stuff with Amanda, Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Saltzman, and Commissioner Fritz, and Commissioner Leonard, who's given me guidance on all sorts of ways, and of course the mayor on a whole host of public safety issues, from gangs, our gang concerns, which are unfinished business from my perspective, which I'm handing over to my successor, our efforts with guns, which have had some success and some not so great successes, our concerns about Old Town, where we're working very closely with DA Mike Trunk, and of course on terrorism matters. You have all kind of been willing and able and committed partners in a way that I think, the first time I knocked on most of your doors, it was, what is this guy doing here? But I've appreciated your openness to working with us, because I have mission as I received it from Attorney General Holder, who was here last week, actually, was to serve as a community convener. And we have this remarkable bully pulpit power as U.S. Attorney. We're not politicians. And therefore, we can say things that that when they come out of the mouths of politicians, everyone wants to ascribe motives to. The advantage of this office is that's not true. When I say things, people generally believe them because I don't have any political motive. I'm not running for office. But that's ineffective without partners in the community who are actual political leaders. So I've had more fun than anyone should be paid to have. I'm exhausted. I'm ready to relax a little bit, but I wanted to stop by and thank you all, because it's really been a lot of fun. And I will say that it's not the only thing we worked on by any stretch, but the JTTF thing I consider a tremendous success of this organization, your leadership, Mayor, and yours closing it out, Randy. But it was really a piece from all of you, from Dan and Nick providing early bedrock support and thought about it. So that's working, by the way. I really think it's working very well. It's informal. It's working very well. We're getting we're working better together, and I don't think we're wasting anybody's time. And I very much appreciate your thoughtfulness throughout that process, but also just through all the projects we've worked on together. So thank you very, very much.
Well, I want to take the opportunity to thank you for having such an enthusiastic and a deep, deep and sincere enthusiasm for working on problem solving on a whole host of issues, and to your willingness to be out in the community at community events that are city events and non-city events to a level and a degree that I've never ever seen before in almost 20 years here in Portland. So your work speaks for itself. It's been amazing work, and I'm very grateful for it.
Thank you, Mayor.
I'd also like to add my accolades for your service, Mr. Holden. I've never seen a U.S. attorney for Oregon who's been as active and over in City Hall as much, and working on issues, as you said, that all of us care about: trafficking, fair housing, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, certainly. But I've never had the opportunity to really interact so directly with a U.S. attorney as I have with you, and you've always conducted yourself with sincerity, convictions, and tenacity, and I really appreciate that in you as a person, but also in your tenure as U.S. attorney. So I wanted to just thank you very much for all you've done for us.
Thank you,
Mayor,
Commissioner.
If I could also just add a brief statement, I would give a dollar to anyone who could name the last four U.S. attorneys, and it takes nothing away from their service. It's just that the U.S. attorney's position has historically been someone who sort of was a little bit in the background, and this U.S. attorney invited us in on the ground floor on his mortgage fraud work, sat by my side when we did our fair housing rollout with Secretary Trasvina, was in my office and all of our offices on a regular basis advising us on JTTF, and walking that thin line between advising us on things that he could and avoiding those things he couldn't talk to us about. And I just want to make one other observation. There was an editorial in the paper the other day that was very critical of the confirmation process and how dysfunctional it's become, and that a president shouldn't have to wait this long to get his or her nominee in. But I think my takeaway from that editorial and other commentary I've seen is that it also acknowledged that with an interim appointment, unlike in other situations, there was no drift here, that this was an interim appointment that could very easily have ripened into a full appointment, and there were many people in the community, taking nothing away from your successor, who thought you would be an ideal candidate for that permanent appointment. But the Congress has acted, and we welcome your successor and will support her fully. But it's unusual to have someone who serves as a quote-unquote interim who has left such a mark as you have in such a short period of time, and it was acknowledged in that editorial in particular. So congratulations.
Thanks, Commissioner.
Dr. White, I'm not surprised that you're exhausted, because you've been texting and phone calling me and late into the evening on weekends. And I call you Dwight, and I'm glad that you call me Amanda. What's also significant is that you know many members of our community by their first name, and you've made a huge effort to reach into our diverse communities and to get to know them and let them get to know you. It makes a big difference, and I think we have had very troubling times over the last 3 years and over the time that you've been in office, and you've made a big difference. So I wish you all the best. What are you going to be doing next? Do you know?
I'm not sure yet. I'm going to be staying in the office at least for a while to do transition, and I may stay there indefinitely. You know, the Assistant United States Attorney job is the second best job in the world, the U.S. Attorney job being the best job in the world for somebody like me. So I'm going to stay for at least a little while. I may stay long term, but I'll sort it out once I've gotten some sleep.
Well, I hope that our paths do continue to cross, because I very much appreciated working with you. I hope that your successor will build on the good work that you've done, and if you could let her know that we are quite friendly here at City Hall and would like to hear from her as soon as possible, that would be great.
I certainly will do.
So I think I do remember the names of the last four U.S. attorneys, but I'm going to ask you to confirm.
The dollar's on my table.
I'm going to ask you to confirm. I think that the longest serving U.S. attorney in the United States was appointed by President Kennedy and served here 30 years or more. Was it Charles Turner?
Sid Lezak.
I should remember
Mr.
that.
Mr. Leonard, if I could just note, since
I lost the dollar.
If you would just yield on that one point. Sid Lezak, who, as we know, died not long ago, was one of the first people I met when I moved to Oregon, and he and I became friends. But I didn't realize at the time a particular piece of history that brought us together, which is by tradition, the ranking minority member of the Judiciary Committee has a potential veto to apply to a U.S. attorney, particularly of that duration. And for some time, my father was the ranking minority member. And it was a testament to Sid that he was always a favorite of Democrats in power, but that no Republican ever exercised essentially a veto.
Right.
And for that reason, he served with great distinction as the longest serving.
He did. But the reason I bring that up is I remember reading when he left office that he assiduously avoided ever being photographed. He never wanted to appear publicly in the newspaper because of the nature of the work that he did. It would be interesting to have you two in the room together to discuss your different styles because you certainly have taken